Hello and welcome to the Around the Nation podcast for the week of October 8th, 2007. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And we're here with our take on week 6 of the Division 3 football season. After all the rubber pellets settled from Saturday night's games, a lot of upsets affecting the top 25 and affecting the way the top of some conferences look.
Well, we knew we were going to have those four top 25 teams lose because there was the head-to-head clashes. But what we weren't expecting was Wartburg to lose to Augsburg, Trinity to lose to Rhodes, or Baldwin-Wallace to lose to Heidelberg.
Those three games especially are games that are just mind-boggling. Now, we go back a couple of years. Augsburg and Wartburg have played some pretty competitive games that come down to a last-second kick a couple of times. Augsburg hasn't been very competitive in that series of late. Then again, on the other hand, for Wartburg, yeah, it's a bad loss. It's a regional loss, but it's not a conference loss.
But they can regroup quickly by getting back into Iowa conference play. They've already beaten Dubuque, although they have Coe and Central left. And, of course, there's another big game in that conference yesterday when Dubuque beat Coe in overtime.
Coe picking up its first loss of the season. Dubuque kind of getting back on track after the home loss to Wartburg last week. In the Southern Collegiate Athletic Conference, Trinity going to Rhodes and losing. Yeah, that's actually the second time in the last three trips that the Tigers have lost that game on the road in Memphis.
And now that puts Millsaps in control of that conference. Remember, Millsaps lost in week one, and it sort of was a big step back for them. And now they've been on a roll since, and they're 4-0 in Southern Conference play.
Trinity still has control of its own destiny, but it would have to go to Millsaps and win in order to tie for first place and win the head-to-head tiebreaker. But the real puzzler, I think, is that Baldwin-Wallace-Heidelberg game. You wrote about what Heidelberg had done coming into this season, and you know we expected that the new coach would have some effect, but this is more effect than I think anybody anticipated.
Yeah, I think when you talk about starting a new mindset and making steps forward, you think maybe they'll pick off a team in the low end of the OAC standings, but we certainly weren't expecting Baldwin-Wallace, a team who was ranked and coming off a tough game last week, to fall here. Maybe they were just sort of hung over from a big loss last week, same as maybe Wisconsin Lacrosse was.
Looking at the St. Olaf-St. John's game, St. Olaf played Valley City State out of conference. That was a game that didn't mean a whole lot. They rolled up some real big numbers in their first three conference games, but faced a real tough challenge, not only going to St. John's, where St. John's plays real well. They're playing at St. John's homecoming, so St. John's has about 14,000 people in the stands, and I think they performed pretty well.
Well, you know, you might ask them, I'm sure they're disappointed with the loss, but when they do step back from this, they'll look and say this was a measuring stick game for them, and they certainly measured up. 26-17, they led in the third quarter. St. John scored a couple of touchdowns. Olaf was able to come back and kick a field goal to cut that margin to 1 point, and St. John's held the ball for the last 5.5 minutes. I'm sure St. Olaf was hoping to get another chance with a couple minutes left on the clock to try and win the game. You know, I guess you can look at it either way. You can look at it as they're struggling with teams that the fourth-ranked team in the country maybe shouldn't struggle with, at least last week with Carlton. But I think, you know, going forward, you build character with your team, and you're going to play these kind of games in the playoffs where it's coming down to the fourth quarter. And to have a couple of those in the bag and a team to know not to give up and know they can win a game late is a big sign.
Digging deep and coming from behind doesn't really... It doesn't really describe the games that number one and number two played this past weekend. We'll come back to the Mount Union Ohio Northern game, but you were at the Mary Hardin-Baylor Hardin-Simmons game. First of all, how was your second trip to Texas, and what did you think of the game? What did you think of Mary Hardin-Baylor specifically?
Well, West Texas is a little different than the rest of Texas, and that's one of the impressions I got from the people in Abilene. Great city, a lot going on at McMurray that I'll be able to write about this week, and also at Mary Hardin-Baylor at Hardin-Simmons regarding the Mary Hardin-Baylor game. Just talking about that game, it was actually pretty good going into the half, 24-14, and Hardin-Simmons, I think, maybe felt like they had some momentum. But their offense didn't give their defense much help, and you know the defense has been much maligned. Offense didn't give them much help in the third quarter by picking up 1 yard, and Mary Hardin-Baylor just put together some methodical drives. What's great about them this year is we know they can run the ball. They're a team, they used three tailbacks yesterday, and were able to run the ball with all of them, but they have a 6'7 receiver, basketball player that's really fit right in with the football team, and gives them now a couple options going down the field, and they have an experienced quarterback in Josh Welch. So they're great on offense, and we haven't even mentioned that defense because their offensive numbers are just overshadowing the defense.
Josh Welch is senior now. He was a freshman when he played in that playoff run up to and including the Stag Bowl for the Crusaders in 2004. Do you think that Mary Harden Baylor has a chance to challenge Mount Union if, you know, everything projects out the down to the end of the year?
I think they're a very strong number two team in the country, and they definitely have a chance. I mean, I don't see how you can really look at anybody besides them and Whitewater right now as the teams who could challenge Mount Union, and we know that Whitewater still has a... They're not the team that they were last year, but that doesn't mean they can't win games.
Okay, Mount Union, not the team they were last year, seemingly a whole heck of a lot better. They really relied on their running game on Saturday. Rotating in Nate Kamik, Justin Ray, Terrence Mooring. And, you know, just for to note, they beat Ohio Northern 44-0 without Pierre Garçon whatsoever.
And that just shows you how, I guess, not just great they are, but how adaptable their offense is. Larry Karras and the guys at Mount Union can do just about anything they want to do on a given day. We've seen them, you know, give Nate Kamik 36 carries and have him rush for over 370 yards or maybe even as many as 40 carries in a day. You know, they'll ride him if they have to. If they have to open up the passing game and spread the field, they'll do that. Yesterday, it was using three tailbacks, and Justin Ray was the one who got all the scoring plays. He scored four touchdowns, but just shows the depth they have in that program that if, you know, even if Nate Kamik were to go down in a big game, they have two guys that could come in and step in that have played in what was supposed to be a big game, but looking at the final score, it turned out not to be that close.
And the other of the three big games in the Ohio Athletic Conference on Saturday, Capital, they don't have Marty Asman, he's done for the year. They don't have Derek Alexander, he's done for the year. Evan Blake, their second wide receiver coming into the season, he was out yesterday after getting hurt the week before. And they still handled John Carroll fairly well, 37-13.
When you play defense as well as Capitals playing defense, you may not need all that offense. And maybe they'll need it against Mount Union, but against all these other teams, they're playing that well defensively. And I think they're managing the ball offensively and doing enough to, you know, just to get enough points to win. Those 13 points yesterday give them 23 points allowed all season now in five games. So they're playing, obviously, tremendously on defense. The other 10 points came against Heidelberg, and they had three shutouts. So when you're playing that well on defense, you have a chance to beat anybody any day.
A bit of a reversal of fortune for Wisconsin lacrosse. You know, as the third quarter ended a week ago in week five, they had a 28-10 lead on Wisconsin Whitewater. They looked like they had that game, which was essentially for the conference championship, one would say, well in hand. They end up giving up 25 points in the fourth quarter. They lose Griffin Moe at quarterback. Moe does not play on Saturday against Wisconsin Eau Claire, and Eau Claire comes up with a 31-29 win against La Crosse.
Well, I know what that's like, being in a situation where you're ahead in the game that you think is going to decide the conference championship. You end up letting another team come back and win. And then you have to go out next week, and you really do, I mean, it's coach speak, but you have to take it one week at a time. You have to sort of flush that last game and come out and play next week, especially in WIAC, because that's a conference where we know, we've seen over the years, teams, there's pretty much no easy games. And for lacrosse, maybe they're hung over a little bit, or maybe Eau Claire is that good.
Yeah, Eau Claire is now 5-1, 2-1 in the Wisconsin Conference. This is a team now next week that may face a similar situation. North Central, which had a 17-0 lead on Wheaton at the halftime, and Wheaton came back to win that game 28-24. Now North Central has to go play Elmhurst next week.
And what's interesting about that situation is we're going to get that clarity in the CCIW, because also Wheaton playing Augustana next week, a game that we'll be at. And we'll get to see, you know, it could go either way. You could see Wheaton sort of salt the conference away, or if you see Augustana pull that upset, and maybe either whoever wins out of North Central and Elmhurst will get right back in this thing, and we may be looking at a three-way tie situation.
Yep, a bit of a jumble at the top of that conference standings. The SCIAC, the Southern California Intercollegiate Athletic Conference game Saturday night, as Occidental essentially ranked 26th last week, won at home against number 25 Redlands, 28-21.
And that was one we were looking forward to all year, because we figured that would probably settle that conference race. You know, it's the de facto title game pretty early in the season. But you have Cal Lutheran still hanging around. You know, obviously Danny Jones is at Whitewater now, but and they got off to a rough start too, having a couple of out of conference losses. But they're 2-0 in the SCIAC, and they could be right there with Occidental. You just don't know in some of these conferences because it's so jumbled at the top.
Jumble at the top kind of describes the NJAC as well, after some interesting, let's say, results on both Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, well, TCNJ, we have to consider them for real now. I mean, that's now a couple of big games they won, and the game they lost to start the season against Muhlenberg. Muhlenberg's won their first five games, too, so it's maybe not as bad of a loss as it looked like in the early going. That win over Rowan was big. Cortland State handed it to Kane. And, you know, Kane was a team we thought was going to be in the picture, and now we really just see Cortland State and TCNJ at the top of the standings, and then Montclair, Rowan, and maybe Western Connecticut still hanging around.
Saw Cortland State play Saturday. They look pretty good. They, you know, lost Alex Smith at the beginning of the season for the second season in a row. And Ray Miles is coming in at quarterback. He's didn't get a whole lot of experience last year. He played about three games before he also got hurt. So he's still kind of getting himself into the offense. But the thing about Cortland is they're still real strong defensively. You know, Adam Haas's brother, Brian Haas, is playing at outside linebacker for him. You may remember Adam Haas is a East Region Defensive Player of the Year for D3Football.com and a Gagliardi Trophy finalist. But on offense, they spread the ball all over the place. They had 15 guys who have caught passes this season, and in calling that game Saturday on D3Cast, we probably noted 8 or 9 receivers, 3 running backs, and a fourth coming off the bench late. I mean, that's a team that's got a lot of different options on offense, and they seem to be moving it around pretty well.
Well, that's one thing. You know, it's easy for us to just look at scores and see the teams that are putting up the big numbers. But when you're playing great on one side of the ball, in Cortland State, if they're playing great on defense, they have that a little bit of time and a little bit of flexibility offensively to sort of develop their guys. And that's going to pay dividends down the road, because in a couple years, with getting so many people involved in offense, they're going to have a lot of guys with experience on offense that have played for a couple years.
Cortland State and New Jersey have yet to play. Cortland State and Montclair State have yet to play. Rowan and Montclair State have yet to play. Rowan and Cortland have yet to play. But somewhere in that group of the four at the top, someone's going to emerge. Maybe it will require tiebreaker math, but someone will get that automatic bid. There are some other conferences that have some interesting things going on as well. Obviously, there's no automatic bid on the line in this particular conference, but the Northwest Conference looking interesting.
Yeah, especially with Pacific Lutheran falling yesterday to Whitworth, you just sort of have that jumble at the top. And we sort of mentioned it. Maybe it was mentioned on the message board this week. Is there a scenario where nobody from the Northwest Conference will get a playoff bid? You know, if they keep picking each other off, there's still some big games left. Linfield has to play Whitworth and that sort of thing. We could be in a situation where we see that, but really what you want to see is one team take control of the conference, and there's a couple, you know, like we said, a couple big games coming up that somebody has a chance to do that.
It's the last year in which the Northwest Conference does not have an automatic bid. This is the second year that they've had 7 teams, and they will have gotten through their waiting period by the 2008 season. If you want to look at where Pool B bids could come from, I mean, remember the President's Athletic Conference is no longer Pool B eligible. We really tend to be drawing from the UAA, from the Atlantic Central Football Conference, from the Northwest Conference, and from the Independents. And if the Northwest Conference doesn't send anybody, you know, you probably have Salisbury and Wesley from the ACFC. There is an interesting-looking group in the UAA with a lot of, lack of losses, but, not sure these teams are going to be able to survive to the end of the season with records like that.
Well, the thing about the UAA, too, is do they play a strong enough schedule for them? If they do lose a game, can you get in with 9-1? We looked last year at Carnegie Mellon; they went undefeated, but every time you ran the numbers, they were right there on the bubble, even with one loss, because of the quality of teams that they played. And you know, some of that is out of a team's control. You schedule a couple years in advance, but some of it is habitually scheduling tough opponents, and it pays off for you. When you win, or even if you lose a game you think you weren't going to lose, it can tend to pay off for you.
With opponents' winning percentage coming into play this year for the first time in a few years in the playoff decision-making scenarios, the fact that Carnegie Mellon upgraded its schedule a little bit, it may help the other teams in that league. Even though Carnegie Mellon is now 2-3, well out of the playoff running, the fact that they played Hobart this year will help the other teams that play Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah, and that's sort of the science or the theory behind scheduling well, is that it does generally help you. Now, if you're a team like Hardin-Simmons, who scheduled 3 opponents that we consider top 25 at the time they played Hardin-Simmons, and you lose all 3 of those games, then you end up being out of playoff contention. And I think that's the first time Hardin-Simmons has had 3 losses since 97, and they kind of made the remark this week or in the press box yesterday that this is going to be the first time they play a game that doesn't mean anything in several years. And that's tough, but I think had they won one of those games, they would be able to survive the losses and have a good chance at the playoffs, and that's really where the scheduling helps.
Coming up this next week, in week 7, some of the interesting games, we begin to see maybe a little bit of Pool C elimination, and one of the games that immediately leaps to mind is when Ohio Northern plays Capital.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a chance for the second team in the OAC to be a playoff team, but this year, with so much quality behind Mountain Union, somebody's really going to have to survive a rugged conference schedule to get through there, and you've already seen Baldwin Wallace, you know, they haven't even been able to last through the bottom half teams, and with that upset against Heidelberg, and so for Capital and ONU and John Carroll really going forward, and maybe just down to Capital and ONU deciding that game next week, and maybe having to play a Pool C bid on the line.
If Capital wins that game, they basically remain in Pool C contention. They will still be undefeated. You have to kind of assume all the time in the OAC that the team that's undefeated now will eventually lose to Mountain Union. And the team, if you lose to somebody who's not Mountain Union, you're also going to lose to Mountain Union, and that almost always is elimination.
We've seen two lost teams make it in the 28-team field and also in the 32-team field, but we also go back to last year when you had two 9-1 teams sitting at home.
Mount St. Joseph against Franklin, a game that's probably not going to be on the radar of too many people nationally, but will probably come down to decide the HCAC.
Yeah, and we're really getting in that place where you have these de facto title games coming up, and especially for Franklin being left home last year at 9-1, losing that game by a touchdown, they're certainly going to be looking for revenge, and they also pretty much have their backs against the playoff wall. They know with the early season non-conference loss to Wabash already that they need to win via the automatic bid.
Game that we're going to be at on Saturday night, Augustana travels to Wheaton. Wheaton looks like it's finally settled on a quarterback. Augustana, with a bit of a puzzling loss against Illinois Wesleyan, but did come back Saturday to beat Elmhurst.
Yeah, and that's a good sign for them, because we talked earlier in the podcast about having that hangover from a tough loss, and for Augustana to bounce back and win 28-7 yesterday. I think they can keep themselves focused toward next week as far as getting ready for that Wheaton game. It should be a tough one.
Mount St. Joseph against Franklin, a game that's probably not going to be on the radar of too many people nationally, but will probably come down to decide the HCAC.
Yeah, and we're really getting in that place where you have these de facto title games coming up, and especially for Franklin being left home last year at 9-1, losing that game by a touchdown, they're certainly going to be looking for revenge, and they also pretty much have their backs against the playoff wall. They know with the early season non-conference loss to Wabash already that they need to win via the automatic bid.
Game that we're going to be at on Saturday night, Augustana travels to Wheaton. Wheaton looks like it's finally settled on a quarterback. Augustana, with a bit of a puzzling loss against Illinois Wesleyan, but did come back Saturday to beat Elmhurst.
Yeah, and that's a good sign for them, because we talked earlier in the podcast about having that hangover from a tough loss, and for Augustana to bounce back and win 28-7 yesterday. I think they can keep themselves focused toward next week as far as getting ready for that Wheaton game. It should be a tough one.
Other key games include Washington and Lee at Hampton, Sydney, Kings hosting Albright. Number 23, Trinity, Texas is at DePauw. Third-ranked Wisconsin Whitewater hosts Wisconsin Oshkosh. Coe is at 6th-ranked Central. Concordia Moorhead at number 13, St. Olaf. And 20th-ranked Linfield is at Southern Oregon. That's our Around the Nation podcast for Week 6 of 2007. Be sure to come back to d3football.com on Thursday for Keith McMillan's column.